With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Walnut growers are upbeat about harvest and prices. After a late season heat wave pummeled their 2022 crop, California walnut growers are much more upbeat about their harvest this year. Favorable growing conditions and an increased rainfall have allowed them to produce higher yields and quality nuts that marketers say will be easier to sell. A top concern now is whether buyers who have gotten used to discounted walnuts are willing to pay more for this year's crop. Don Barton, a San Joaquin County walnut grower and marketer, said pricing at the start of the current marketing year is already 40% higher than where it ended last year. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now let's get into today's show headlines. Governor Newsom signs the Food Safety Act. California's Governor Gavin Newsom last week signed the Food Safety Act. And while it's delayed until 2027, the legislation bans food products containing brominated vegetable oil, potassium bromide, and red dye number 3. Newsom cited similar bans in the European Union in his announcement, saying, quote, "There have been many misconceptions about this bill and its impacts." In referencing a bag of Skittles from the European Union, Newsom claimed it was, quote, "demonstrable proof that the food industry is capable of maintaining product lines while complying with different public health laws, country to country." The European Union banned the food additives in question following a review back in 2008. The California measure requires new makers to reformulate their products to comply with the law when selling them in-state, beginning January 1st of 2027. Food manufacturers are unlikely to produce two versions of a product. Thus, the law is expected to impact products nationwide. Other states are also considering similar measures. An AFB contributed to that report, and now here's Brian German with more Ag News.
The Farm's Food Future Initiative, known as F3, has received approximately $65 million to help accelerate the integration of technology and skills in the agricultural industry. Executive Director for VISTA at UC Merced, Lee Bernacki, explained some of the early successes of the F3 initiative.
F3 is funded by the Build Back Better Regional Challenge, and it was the largest award given by the Economic Development Agency. So the primary goal is to create jobs and opportunities. One of the early wins was investment in R&D partnerships across Fresno State, UC Merced, and A&R with industry partners like Gallo or Bronco, and building on the test beds that we have. Another one is finding ways that ag tech may displace current farm workers and making sure that those farm workers have a pathway to prosperity as well, and that they can get upskilled and engage in this ag tech revolution. So F3 surveyed 12,000 farm workers about the kind of education that they want, and we're building curriculum that will enable farm workers to be hired in different ways and positions and maybe have more stability and better, cleaner, greener, safer jobs.
A new record was set earlier this week at Half Moon Bay's 50th annual Safeway World Championship Pumpkin Weigh-Off. Travis Ginger of Anoka, Minnesota, was the winner of this year's contest, setting a new world record with a pumpkin weighing 2,749 pounds. Ginger's been growing pumpkins for nearly 30 years and last year set a new U.S. record for growing a giant gourd. He first competed in Half Moon Bay's annual weigh-off in 2020 and has won three of the city's last four giant pumpkin contests. The pumpkin champion won a $30,000 prize for growing the biggest pumpkin and setting a new world record. The previous world record for heaviest pumpkin was set by a grower in Italy who produced a 2,702-pound pumpkin in 2021. The championship pumpkin weigh-off is the lead-up to the annual Half Moon Bay Pumpkin Festival, which returns again this year on October 14th and 15th. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and at statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
GMOs? Genetically engineered? Bioengineered? What's what? Well, GMO stands for genetically modified organism. It's the common term many people use for foods created through a process scientists call genetic engineering. And you'll start seeing bioengineered on some food packages to let you know the product or some of its ingredients come from GMOs. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, speaking at the recent AgriPulse Ag Outlook Forum, the head of Rabo Research Food and Agribusiness for North America, Roland Fumazi, told attendees the nation's economy could be heading into a recession.
But this is our house view right now. We are still expecting that the U.S. will fall into a mild recession in the fourth quarter of this year, okay? Which will continue through Q1, and then we'll start to see a bit of a rebound again. You can see that we're also estimating, as you would expect in a recessionary type environment, that unemployment does start to rise. Okay, that's the dark blue line that you see there. I would tell you that every month that goes by and every new sort of data and information point that we get our hands on, I would say that we're getting closer and closer to saying, we're being too pessimistic on the U.S. economy. The data just seem to continue to sort of stack up against this. So what does that mean? Maybe it means an actual soft landing for the Fed, right? Meaning we won't go into any kind of recession. Or maybe it just means that, yes, we do have this light recession, but maybe it gets pushed out a quarter, right? That's definitely a possibility. And again, every month it seems like it's stacking up sort of against us because the economy continues to be so robust in the U.S.
To the audience, he pointed out two rows in his PowerPoint slides that showed a drop.
Now, this may look scary. You see those two big orange bars coming down for this recession that I'm talking about, or this drop in GDP. Keep in mind, those two bars are like 0.4, 0.5% drop in GDP. So super soft, super light. To put it in comparison, go back to 2008, 2009. We had a quarter back in 2008 where our GDP dropped over 7%, right? When we shut down the economy, essentially, for the initial COVID lockdowns, we lost 30%, right? So again, not trying to scare anybody about recession here, very, very light recessionary expectation. And because of that, we do expect unemployment to rise.
He said while headline inflation is more volatile, the Fed is keeping a close eye on super core inflation, which has spent the last 2.5 years vacillating between 4% and 5% annual rate.
The problem with that is that's twice too high from what the Fed wants, right? They want to bring that down close to that 2% annualized rate. Now, here's the other interesting thing about that super core. As you might imagine, it's more heavily weighted toward services. And services are heavily, the cost of services is heavily weighted toward wages, right? Now, in the agriculture community, think about that. Think about the Federal Reserve is really watching this index and waiting for wage inflation to significantly slow down, right? Now, most of us in this room would probably all day long, if we could say in the ag industry that our annual wage growth and wage costs was only 2%, for example, which is kind of what the Fed's looking for, we'd probably take that all day long in this industry. So from that perspective, it feels like the Fed's sort of chasing a unicorn a little bit, but we think it's possible. And that's why we think in order for the Fed to really get inflation, this core inflation under control, we're going to need to see some type of slowdown in the U.S. economy.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, according to new data released by the USDA and compiled by the U.S. Meat Export Federation, August exports of U.S. pork were steady year over year. This was led by another tremendous performance in Mexico. Shipments to that country totaled a little over 226,000 metric tons. USMEA President and CEO Dan Hallstrom discussed U.S. pork's remarkable growth in Mexico, but notes that demand is also climbing in other Western Hemisphere destinations.
Pork continues to be on a roll as it has been most of this year. Another big month led by Mexico. In fact, Mexico had a record value exported in the month of August of almost $212 million. But as we've said the last several months, it's not limited just to Mexico. Central America came in with a very big month. And then we've got, you know, Australia and Taiwan that had big months again, similar to the last several months. And I left out Japan. Japan had a good month as well in August, up 5% over a year ago. So it's good to see some of that chilled business in Japan on the pork side coming back.
Now, through the first 8 months of this year, pork exports were 11% above last year's pace at 1.91 million metric ton, valued at $5.3 billion. But when it comes to August beef exports, they were well below the large totals posted a year ago, but did show improvement over July's results. Exports total of 109,000 metric ton. That's down 19% from last year. But Hallstrom notes that beef exports to Mexico continued to trend higher in August, and Central America had an excellent month.
While still down year on year, improved month over July, 109,000 tons, led by Mexico, up 16% over a year ago. So similar to the pork situation, we're hitting on all cylinders on beef in Mexico as well. But to also look at some of the other Latin American regions are doing well. Central America had a big month led by Guatemala. On the Asian side, Japan and Korea are still down year on year, but they had significantly better months over July. So that's a good sign, especially when you look at the chilled program business in particular. I think we're starting to see a bit of a rebound there. That being said, there's still headwinds. Most certainly the U.S. dollar in Japan is a large headwind. And the lack of consumer confidence, especially in food service, not only in Japan and Korea, but I would add China into that list as well.
A detailed summary of the August export results can be found on the USMEF website, usmef.org. And the September USDA turkey raised report indicates a 4% increase from 2022. They note that turkeys raised in the U.S. during 2023 is forecast at $219 million. Now, the largest turkey-producing state is Minnesota at 39 million head. North Carolina produces 29 million. Arkansas at 27.5 million. Indiana produced 20 million turkeys. Missouri at 18 million. While Virginia is expected to produce 15.4 million turkeys. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
If your soil could talk, what would it say? If it's healthy, it may already be saying some good things about your future. Because farmers who use soil health building systems that include no-till, cover crops, and diverse species and rotations report greater productivity, profitability, and resiliency to weather extremes. Learn more about what your soil is saying about its health and your future. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
An innovative way to reduce hunger in rural areas. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. Delivery of food may be the way to increase access in rural America, according to a recent report by CoBank. While roughly 1 in 10 Americans faces food insecurity, rural communities are particularly affected. Rural communities comprise 63% of all U.S. counties, but 87% of the counties with the highest rates of food insecurity. Food delivery has become an expected service for many Americans. However, only 37% of rural residents have access to major food delivery services. Delivery mechanisms exist, particularly for shelter stable food and beverage, even if it takes the form of FedEx, UPS, or USPS. Fresh food offerings present another challenge altogether, but more direct-to-consumer approaches should, in the long term, be able to capitalize on improvements in technology. Further, the report suggests that convenience stores, dollar stores, and even liquor stores have been considered as possibilities for reducing food insecurity in more rural areas. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen. One often overlooked aspect of estate planning involves cataloging where the decedent's important documents are located and who has access to them. The access issue is particularly important when it comes to the decedent's digital assets, such as accounts involving email, banks, credit cards, and social media. Who has access to a decedent's digital assets and information? Certainly, the estate's fiduciary should have access, but it's the type of access that is the key. The type of access, such as the ability to read the substance of electronic communications, should be clearly specified in the account owner's will or trust. If access to digital assets and information is to be granted to a third party before death, the type and extent of access should be set forth in a power of attorney. But even with proper planning, it's likely that a service provider will require that the fiduciary obtain a court order before the release of any digital information or the granting of access. Digital assets are a very common piece of a decedent's estate. Make sure you've taken the needed steps to allow the proper people to have access post-death. Doing so can save time and expense during the estate administration process. There are also tax consequences of exchanging digital assets after death. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCullough.
Now being accepted at local USDA service centers. Fiscal year 2024 applications for two of the department's natural resource conservation programs, Environmental Quality Incentives Program and Conservation Stewardship Program.
We've made those funds available to our states, so EQIP and CSP. Folks should walk into our USDA office. We're having signups right now.
Natural Resources Conservation Service Chief Terry Cosby says in addition to EQIP and CSP signups focused on climate smart practices, applications for the current funding cycle for the Agricultural Conservation Easements Program are being accepted through November 13th.
In the ASAP, we have two different things. We have what we call WLE, and that's our wetland reserve part of it. And then we have ALE, is our agricultural land easements. Two different things have two different focus. But when we look at those, we're looking at the soils that have a lot of high carbon stock. How can we make sure those don't change? Because a lot of this is we're trying to protect this land from urbanization or changing the landscape. And so if we can get an easement on these areas, we can keep it in productive agriculture.
Meanwhile, funding opportunities for the Regional Conservation Partnership Program are scheduled for applications early next year. The chief says recent significant federal investments in NRCS programs and increased focus on climate smart conservation practices should address a previous backlog of program applications by landowners and partners. But in addition,
we're really excited about all of these new customers that are going to walk through the door for the very first time.
Chief Cosby says several of these new applicants consist of beginning farmers and landowners, both in rural and urban settings. Several that have never applied for NRCS programs due to oversubscription or because they are just starting out.
We've hired outreach coordinators in every state now, and their job is to go out into these communities and talk to folks and say, hey, there's assistance available to do some of these things that you want to do with your farm. And so we're seeing a whole new set of customers that are walking through the door.
Additional details about NRCS programs, funding, and signups are available online at www.nrcs.usda.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination.
our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
Today's crop report will provide fresh news beyond the harvest progress for the grain trade, and tomorrow kicks off third quarter earnings season. I'm Mark Oppel with today's bottom line report brought to you by Kloss Equipment. December corn has been range-bound really since Labor Day. January soybean and the December wheat futures, Chicago, Minneapolis, and Kansas City, range-bound the past 2 to 3 weeks. All could break out of those ranges by the close today after the crop report, and we see the path of least resistance lower. Harvest delays next week could be minor support. South American weather as important, and we think can add pressure. Wheat attracting buyers worldwide. Egypt, Bangladesh, Thailand, and Japan all have tendered for wheat on the world market. Maximize your harvest potential with the efficiency, reliability, and the affordability of the Kloss Treon 740 Combine. Take a closer look at Kloss.com. This is the bottom line report. Third quarter earnings season starts tomorrow. J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, Wells Fargo all reporting. Wall Street watching the amount of bad loans written off. Consumer Price Index comes today and will likely show we haven't seen the end of inflation or the end of higher interest rates ahead. That's our bottom line. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
And in more agriculture news, a new dairy checkoff growth program with pizza partners is expected to drive a lot of additional cheese use during the rest of 2023. Here's Chad Smith with the report.
Paul Zimnisky is Group EVP of Health and Wellness Insights and Innovation with DMI. He says the bulk of the cheese will be used domestically with Domino's and internationally through a major quick-serve restaurant pizza chain.
It's a big win for us. When you add the Domino's program, this international player program, you're looking at 12 million cheese pounds going through in the back half of this year. Incremental. That's big as we're trying to help our farmers and move a lot of incremental volume.
The work DMI and these two restaurant partners are doing together is going to move a lot more cheese this year. DMI is engaging with pizza restaurants to increase pizza consumption, which will lead to more U.S. cheese sales.
It's a different thing. You look at, you know, on the international, pizza's still developing. The household penetration across, whether it's the Middle East, Africa, Southeast Asia, it's a one or two times special moment. So for us, trying to increase that penetration in the households to bring that both the enjoyment and the growth is a huge opportunity for us. We've been working there since 2017 with some major players like a Domino's, like a Pizza Hut.
DMI works with many other food companies to encourage more dairy usage, including Taco Bell and McDonald's. Zimnisky says the checkoff has a lot to offer these business partners, which in turn will benefit U.S. dairy producers.
Our goal is to prove the opportunities. So we go in and bring insights around ways you can grow with dairy. So insights and innovation and growth spaces. Then what we offer up is the R&D expertise. Again, this is how we have on-site scientists, or some of these places we have a pop-in scientist, look across the supply chain. Hey, who can help these guys? Because we're supplier agnostic, right? So what we do is we can help develop the product and then say, hey, these are the 10 or 20 suppliers you guys go talk to. And then we always have that lens of, is it going to drive incremental sustainable sales for our farmer? That's our focus.
For more information about the Dairy Checkoff, visit usdairy.com/forfarmers. Chad Smith reporting.
Again, if you'd like to find out more information, you can visit usdairy.com/forfarmers. And now here's Sabrina Halverson with more Ag News.
Cattle producers continue to keep their eyes on the proposed Opportunities for Fairness in Farming Act. Senior Director of Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Tanner Beamer, says the OFF Act would be damaging to the NCBA and other organizations.
It essentially would say that checkoffs are not allowed to contract with organizations that, or entities rather, that employ a registered federal lobbyist.
Checkoffs are already prohibited by law from influencing public policy. The OFF Act would also prohibit checkoff funds from being used to disparage other commodities. But Beamer says that's another rule that's already enforced by the USDA. Supporters of the OFF Act, meanwhile, say the aim is to improve financial transparency and accountability within the checkoff organizations. Read more on our website, agnetwest.com. I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
If you go online, as I just did, looking for songs about pumpkins or jack-o'-lanterns, you enter a vast wasteland. About the best that I could dig up was this.
Jack-o'-lantern, jack-o'-lantern, shining bright, perched on the porch on Halloween night.
Oh, note the lush and large musical arrangement. Drive you crazy. So, my search for pumpkin songs, a total bust. However, if you instead are looking for some facts and figures about pumpkins, there is a place that is chock full of information. It's a special webpage produced by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Economic Research Service.
We update it every year for fall. The vast majority of pumpkins are produced for the fall holidays.
That's Greg Astol, research economist in charge of that webpage, and we'll tell you the easiest way to get to it in a moment. First, Greg, why a webpage devoted to pumpkins?
Pumpkins are a very popular fall crop. They comprise a large amount of agricultural production, and everybody's excited about pumpkins in the fall.
So, to test our knowledge about pumpkins, it's quiz time! Thank you, thank you. Yes, I'll ask the questions, and we'll let both of our listeners have a chance to answer. And then, Greg, you will supposedly have the answers to give us, right?
Okay,
here we go. Question number one. Approximately how many pounds of pumpkins are grown in this country every year? Multiple choice question. Is it a million, half a million, a billion, or 2 billion pounds? No fair peeking at the web page. Is it a million pounds of pumpkins, half a million, a billion, or 2 billion pounds? Greg, the answer, please.
In the United States, we produce about 2 billion pounds of pumpkins a year.
Very good. Next question. What state's the biggest producer of pumpkins in this country? That ought to be easy. You only have 50 possible choices to choose from there. Well, Greg, what's the answer? Biggest pumpkin production state?
Illinois is the top state by weight, acreage, and yield.
Yes, Illinois does grow well over a quarter of all the pumpkins produced in this country.
But those pumpkins are predominantly for the processing market. They're going to food. Other top states like California, Indiana, and Texas are predominantly growing for the decorative market.
Now, if you'd like to find out more about pumpkins, amaze your friends with facts and figures, easiest way to find the webpage, just go online, search USDA pumpkin page, USDA pumpkin page. This is Not that thing again. I gotta go. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Please make it stop. Thank you.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
How are GMO plants made? First, scientists look for a desired trait in a plant, animal, or even bacteria. It could be a trait like resistance to drought, insects, or viruses. Then they copy the gene that contains that trait and insert it into the DNA of the plant they want to improve. Scientists then grow that plant to see if it adopts the desired trait. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
Today's specialty crop news brought to you by the Almond Board of California. You can find them online at almonds.com. ABC Senior Specialist of Industry Communications, Taylor Hillman, is with us here again this morning. And Taylor, we're actually going to be seeing each other coming up this weekend at the CAPCA conference, correct?
Yeah, that's right. The Almond Board of California will once again be participating at the annual California Association of Pest Control Advisors annual conference and Agri Expo. This is the North year, so it's in Reno. It's not in LA, Anaheim area. So we will be there. And it's coming up, Brian, October 15th through the 17th.
And as part of being there, is Almond Board going to have any personnel presenting this year?
Yeah, we usually have at least one person from ABC doing some sort of a presentation. And this year we will have our IPM person, our pest management specialist, which is Dr. Lauren Fan. She will be talking on Monday, October 16th. That's the main day. She'll be talking that day in the afternoon from 1:40 to 2:10. And she'll be covering innovation and technology in almonds, specifically to pest control management. So she'll be going over some of the new research findings that are out there regarding pest management and some of the practices that we're looking at. And it'll be a good update on what we're seeing from research findings in a bunch of different areas, and then also kind of a teaser to all of the information that'll be coming at our conference down the road. So if you're going to be at CAPCA, this is a great session to go to. I do believe there's education. Don't quote me on that, but I do believe there's education on that one. And then it'll kind of be a preemptive session for the ones that are coming at TAC later in December.
So a little bit of a preview of sorts for maybe a more comprehensive look at almond issues that we're looking forward to seeing coming up at TAC. And now, is Almond Board going to be exhibiting at CAPCA this year too?
Yeah, we usually have a booth every single year, and our field outreach guys will be there this year, along with myself and one of our marketing people as well. We will be in the Agri Expo, our booth. You shouldn't be able to miss it. It'll be a good looking booth, and we'll have we've got some new pictures and stuff to hang up too as well. But we'll be also advertising our most recent marketing plan. If people have not heard about it, the Own Your Prime campaign with Coach Prime Deion Sanders. So we'll have a pop-up with some information on that marketing campaign. And because of that, we will also be giving away a signed Deion Sanders football. So, you know, a lot of these booths like to give away something to collect business cards. We're doing the same thing. We'd like to identify more of our pest control advisors that follow Almond Board content. And so we'll be collecting cards and having people sign up for a PCA list so we can send them specific communications for PCAs, and they can have a chance to win this Deion Sanders signed football.
Very cool. And now, being at this particular conference, what's the value for the Almond Board in presenting information with this type of audience, specifically PCAs?
Yeah, it's very valuable. You know, we see it as a service to growers. I mean, these are the people who influence growers. They're the ones who help growers, you know, do the best they can and get by. And right now, with it being kind of a bad time in the industry, you know, growers are leaning on pest control advisors more and more on what they can get away with and what they need and what they don't need. So, being able to communicate with pest control advisors about the latest topics, what they're seeing, and tell them what some of the research findings we've seen, some of the new tools that we have. It's just a great opportunity to touch base with the people who, you know, really write those basically prescriptions for growers on what they need for their crops. So it's nice to be able to get them in a large audience and be able to have those specific conversations outside of the grower, knowing that this is just PCAs that are at this type of conference.
So kind of offering some of that information that eventually does get to the grower, but this is the avenue or conduit to it. So definitely some value in them being up to speed with the research and other efforts of the Almond Board.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we want the grower's PCA to be as educated as a grower is. So giving them access to as much information that we can offer the grower, I think, is only a positive thing for the grower. So if you're at this CAPCA conference, October 15th through the 17th, you can stop by the booth. We're going to have a lot of our pest-related tools there. Of course, the popular identification cards. I know a lot of industry members have those already, but if you need more or We're going to have a new version, which is just kind of a bigger version of the pest ID. We have the pest ID, the almond disease and nutrient deficiency ID, and the weed ID cards. Those are very popular. We give a lot of those out to growers and industry members. We'll also have our best practices there, of course, the cover crop guide, the irrigation guide, the nitrogen guide was very popular this year as people kind of looked at, you know, maybe seeing what they could get away with this year, try to save some money. People were looking at the nitrogen guide. And then as far as any replanting with the almond rootstocks, that's only about a year old, almond rootstock guide. And then whole orchard recycling. So we'll have a lot of our resources there that growers can or that PCAs can come and get. They're all free. You know, as long as it's going towards the PCA, which helps the grower, we're okay with that. And so being able to get these resources out to the industry is important. And I think this is a great opportunity to come by and grab them. And if you can't, you can order these online as well. So you can go online to our online resource ordering form, which is under the tools and resources section of our website. So you can do this online. But if you're going to be at CAPCA, great opportunity to stop by, say hi, talk to us about what's going on in the industry, grab some resources, and you'll be set.
Thanks, Brian. And stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and at Statewide Agriculture News at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. Sharing your harvest experience for farmers.gov. USDA is asking farmers this season to share what they've been harvesting. And as American farmers harvest the crops that feed, clothe, and fuel our world, it's important that consumers get a firsthand look through social media. USDA is asking farmers to share their experience on farmers.gov social media. You can collect photos of what's happening on your operation as you harvest, and if you're comfortable, the people that make it happen, like friends and family. You can also write an email to fp.social@usda.gov and attach those photos or videos with a quick note by telling them your name, location of your operation, and the name of your farm. Your operation's social accounts, like Facebook and Instagram names. What are you harvesting this year? And where does that harvest go? How is it used? Also, what are your personal thoughts on this year's harvest? All of this information will be used as materials for outreach and educational purposes. If you'd like to learn more or chat with somebody about this campaign, you can visit nrcs.usda.gov or www.farmers.gov and check out their social media pages. And in more agriculture news, growth in U.S. imports of agriculture products is leveling off. Red-hot imports of foreign agricultural products are cooling down, says Gary Crawford as he talks with USDA economist Bart Kinner.
This country's agricultural trade deficit is growing, but there is a bit of encouraging news on the ag import front.
We're seeing a leveling off of agricultural import values,
which USDA economist Bart Kinner says have, of course, been growing rapidly over the last few years, but now seem to be slowing down a bit.
From 2020 to 2021, imports increased 14%. From 2021 to 2022, agricultural imports increased 19%. So far, through 11 months of this fiscal year, compared to the first 11 months of last fiscal year, 2022 to 2023, agricultural imports have only increased 1%.
Now, yes, at last count, we're still running an ag trade deficit, $14 billion, but Kenner says that's because of more declines in U.S. export sales and less to increasing imports of foreign ag products. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
World Food Program launches the Gaza-West Bank humanitarian efforts. The United Nations World Food Program is deeply concerned by the rapidly deteriorating situation in Israel and Palestine. As the conflict intensifies, civilians, including vulnerable children and families, face mounting challenges in accessing essential food supplies, with food distribution networks disrupted and food production severely hampered by hostilities. The program called for humanitarian corridors on Tuesday as it launched an emergency operation for Gaza and the West Bank. WFP urgently requires access and funding to reach those in need. A total of $17.3 million is needed in the next 4 weeks to address the situation. On Monday, WFP distributed ready-to-eat food to 73,000 people. Distributions are ongoing daily for displaced people in shelters in Gaza. In the next few days, pending the replenishment of food stocks through the opening of humanitarian corridors, WFP will distribute food to 300,000 people in host communities and make available cash-based platforms to humanitarian partners. NAFB contributed to that report.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.